So what are you going to tell us, tough guys? My usual, zero, nothing.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Tyson Popplestone Show. Great to have you here again today. We're mixing it up a little bit, a little Q&A episode today. It's been so fun, the rapid rise over the last couple of weeks with some of the interviews that I've done and how many of you have jumped on board. And as a result, there's been some really interesting questions coming through on YouTube and on Instagram. Some of you shooting through some emails. So I'm going to do my best today just to answer as many of these as I can, because I thought I used to do quite a lot of these, not Q&A, but just solo episodes when it first started out. In fact, for those of you who've been around for a while, you probably remember how this show started. It definitely wasn't an interview show. It was more just an excuse to sit down and riff on some comedy ideas. And so with that, it's funny how things form over time. You start something with one intention in mind, and then gradually it starts to take shape in a completely different direction. And this is one of those things. For whatever reason, what it started as a couple of years ago is definitely not what it looks like now. And sometimes I look at the actual list of episodes and go, should I create a little bit of clarity with what's actually going on in this show and just delete the old episodes with the intention of letting anyone who's new come by and see all the Q&A, see all the interviews, and they just understand that's what the show is. And then I thought, no, it's kind of part of the fun. Like, I love looking at the old stuff, that whatever it is that someone's doing, I love looking back and going, like, a great example of this is, do you know Awaken with JP? He's that satire kind of, he just takes the piss on YouTube, essentially. He takes the piss out of woke culture a lot. And pretty much just anything that's politically incorrect, he's going to jump on there and start speaking about in a really funny way. And I mean, he's got the traction to prove it. He's got a massive following. But a while ago, for whatever reason, I was scrolling through his actual YouTube channel and I got back to his first couple of videos. And it actually started as like a legitimate, almost, he was like a life coach. It was like a motivational speaker. He came on and he was just giving like beautiful life lessons and doing his best just to help us guys out with whatever it was that we were facing. And then gradually, I'm not sure what changed, but he started to take the piss. And then those videos got so much more traction than his actual serious ones. And so as a result, I guess he just kind of leant into that. It's the beauty and the curse sometimes of just following the views. And so, I mean, I'm so glad he did, because it's been so much fun to watch his channel. So, I mean, I'm using that as a little bit of an excuse as to why I'm not going to delete the old episodes. Because for me, I just find it funny to look back and go, I remember that. I remember being so angry about COVID and just talking into the microphone, trying to find comedy ideas. I still like those podcasts. I mean, Bill Burr's got a really funny one as well, where he'll just jump on the microphone a couple of times a week and just speak about whatever's going on in his world. And it's really entertaining. I'm sure he's trying to find comedy material in there somewhere. Even if he's not, I mean, it's fun just to listen to. Just to listen to Bill's rants. Anyway, the creative world, like the podcast world's a really interesting one. The YouTube world's a really interesting one. Because I think what I struggle with sometimes, especially in this earlier phase of it, because I see where I'm at now as like a way or a super early phase of the podcast, based on the fact that there has been a massive pivot. I see this podcast's life really only been like 6 months, in the sense that that's where so many of the interviews have started. And that's the direction I'm really keen to keep sending it. I mean, I'll do, you know, from time to time, I'll do a solo episode like this, but I'm thinking they'll be very rare. I mean, unless you guys are interested, I'm happy to do more. I like mixing it up a little bit. But anyway, today I wanted to, as I said, sit down, answer a few questions about that whole world, about the YouTube world, the podcast world, because, I mean, they're both fairly saturated markets at the moment. And a lot of people speak about this idea that it's really hard to break through in any of them. And I mean, some of that's, of course, true. But I also think some of that is just a lack of understanding about what's actually going on in those worlds. And so with that said, let me lay that as a bit of a foundation, because I think a lot of today's conversation revolves around the theme of what I just mentioned there. So, I mean, there's some great questions here. I'm not going to get through all of them. I've selected 20, but we'll just see how they go. No particular order. How do we go? As a comedian, what do you find most challenging about crafting and delivering jokes to diverse audiences? This is a conversation I've been having a little bit recently because I feel as though I've been in a little bit of a dry spell with actually writing jokes, with trying to come up with new material and trying to come up with new content, and also trying to figure out what an actual good joke is. That's the hardest part sometimes, is because, so there's so many elements, I think, to stand-up comedy that a lot of people who aren't in the scene would just have no idea about. I mean, 6 or 7 years ago, I had no idea about them either. And so this would have been a shock to me. But essentially, with jokes, you've got a few factors. First of all, you've got to figure out what's a funny premise. And then you've got to figure out, okay, how can I actually make that into a joke? Like, I'm not just going to get up there. My style is not one-liners. I'm not just getting up there and reading a one-liner. And then you'll have those two figured out sometimes, and you'll get up in front of an audience. You'll say your joke, and then you've got to craft it and mold it and shape it over, you know, weeks and sometimes months. I've got jokes that I'm still sort of navigating my way through that I've been playing with for a couple of months, and they're getting funnier and they're getting better. But every now and then you listen back and like, oh, there's still something missing. And so, just to add fuel to the fire of confusion with stand-up comedy, sometimes you'll have a good joke. You'll have something that works in 4 out of 6 rooms, and you'll take it to that fifth room, and all of a sudden you'll go through the motions and there's just something in the air that's missing. And so you'll hit the punchline. And I had an experience like this a couple of weeks ago where I was at a gig in Melbourne. It was a quiet night. It's a fairly reputable gig, good little room down at Lido Comedy. But it was just one of those nights where the atmosphere was a little bit flat and everyone was getting up. Even good comedians, I was watching good comedians get up and hit their punchlines, and I'd seen those jokes before and I'd seen them absolutely just rip a room to pieces in the best way, people laughing. And I watched it and there was something in the air that was off. And I sit there in those moments, I'm like, what is going on here? Like, what is actually taking place? And I kind of get it because, like, you know when you go to a social event and everyone knows everyone and everyone's had a couple of drinks and there's an atmosphere in the room where it's excited and everyone's a little bit pumped and you're all happy to be with each other and you can probably push the boundary of what's acceptable there when you're with a pretty comfortable audience. But sometimes, like this night, there was only like 10 people in the room or 12 people in the room, which is a fairly awkward amount of people to have in a small room, especially if you don't know each other. And there were like lots of couples. There were just 2 people here, 2 people there. And no one knows each other. No one's really drinking, or they're halfway through a glass of champagne. And as a result, no one's super comfortable to laugh out loud at things that they're not sure are really appropriate. Which, if you're anything like my kind of humor, it's not that appropriate. So you're going to have to be careful because your social credit's going to drop a lot if you're in a small room like that. You don't know anyone. You're laughing out loud with confidence at some Muppets jokes. And so, like, there's some of the factors that I find super challenging. But the other thing is just coming up with jokes. Like, so I said before, you'll take time to actually come up with a premise. You'll take time to work on that joke and flesh it out. But I've got a notebook sort of just like this. And for a while, inspired by Seinfeld and like a romantic love for, or like a love of the nostalgia, the romantic side of comedy, where I would sit down with a pen, that book, and I'll just write for 20 minutes a day, say. Like, I'd have a premise and just... Sometimes I wouldn't even have a premise. I'd just start writing. And then I did that for about 6 months. But the thing with that, the problem that I faced is you get a whole heap of ideas, but none of them are really fleshed out. And that's what you notice in comedy as well. Heaps of people write heaps, but a lot of those people who write the most, not all of them, but a lot of those people, from what I can tell, who write the most, they'll get up there and they'll have all these half-baked ideas all the time. And I feel like you don't get a really good gauge of where they're at with their actual jokes. Like, some of them seem funny, some of them aren't that funny. And you're like, oh, it'd just be really interesting to see what happened if that was fleshed out. And I fell into that trap, writing for 20 minutes a day. I was constantly coming up with new ideas, but they all sort of sucked because I gave none of them time. And so I've right now hit pause on my daily writing routine like that. And now with all those premises, I'm just trying to flesh out ideas and trying to make them make sense and trying to make them funny. And yeah, so there are a couple of things. What was this one? Oh, crafting and delivering jokes to diverse audiences. It's actually a good question because at the level of comedy that I'm at the moment, you kind of, I hate admitting it, but it's to a degree it's true. There's 2 kinds of comedians. You've got the kind of comedian like, this is the direction that I think it's going in at the moment. You've got your direction, your comedians who are just running their own show, which is kind of what I'm trying to do. I'm not interested in working for for like big radio stations or big TV shows, or not that I even know if there's any big TV shows in Australia anymore, or, you know, with the exception of shows like Married at First Sight, which I've got no interest in going on because there's just so much that, well, first of all, because I'm married, but second of all, because those kind of shows, they've got so much that the editors can do that can make you look good or bad after the actual event. But anyway, I say all that because I think if you're trying to get on a particular program or you're trying to get into some particular room, you've got to be really, really cautious about how you structure jokes, because obviously the more woke you are, the better your chances of, you're not getting a joke in Melbourne and those places like TV and radio or whatever, if you're not on the woke bus, essentially. You got to say the right things. You got to follow the trend. And I've got no interest in that because I just don't find it funny. And so I feel as though with that said, I'm happy to take a few more swings at the fence and just see what happens. And naturally, like, this is one thing Ricky Gervais speaks about all the time. He goes, everyone is going to be offended by something. So the idea of trying to craft a perfect comedy set where someone's not offended is just of no interest. And for me, that's kind of why I got involved in stand-up comedy, because I'm like, I'm not interested in just being a people pleaser and saying the right things. That's what, I mean, you can do that everywhere. I like the idea of just saying things you're not supposed to say and seeing if you can make it funny. And so I feel like I'm not that much of a disagreeable person usually. Like, if I'm just in a conversation with you, I'm probably going to be pretty friendly most of the time. Unless we start arguing about something, then I might arc up a little bit. But I don't, for better or worse, I don't push back that much just in general conversation. I'm just happy to hear your ideas and hear your thoughts, and from there, just whatever, just sort of make my own opinion based on that. But with comedy, you have to be a little more provocative, especially if you want to be, or especially if you want to do the kind of comedy which I find fun. And so naturally, yeah, I had a bloke a couple of weeks ago. I can't even remember what the joke was, but it was the first time a bloke left the building because he said what I was doing was just offensive. And I mean, maybe he had a point. I'm sure it wasn't a well-established joke, but yeah, it's part of the fun for me. So yeah, as a comedian, what do you find most challenging about crafting and delivering jokes to a diverse audience? That, I think I broke that down into two sections and answered what's challenging about crafting jokes and delivering that to a diverse audience. What do we got here? What motivated you to start your podcast? Well, I kind of answered this in that last question. A couple of things, really. The very first thing was I was just trying to figure out ways to write jokes, and I was sick of just sitting down and writing with pen and paper. And I mentioned Bill Burr. I like Tim Dillon. I love Theo Von. I love hearing these guys do their solo podcast. They always made me laugh. And for me, I constantly listened to it, and I was like, what a great way to come up with joke ideas. And so that was kind of the inspiration. But now, I mean, it's that double-edged sword. It's also a platform for you to create for yourself, especially if you start to get a little bit of traction with it, which this one has been lucky enough to get. The interesting thing, I feel a lot of people in the comedy world say, is it helpful or is it frustrating to have a podcast which is not uniquely aimed at comedy? Because people come to listen to an interview and then they find out by default that you're a comedian. And it's, I mean, arguably, I'm not necessarily saying, actually, I think I do believe this is true. I would say Joe Rogan's an even better podcaster than what he is comedian. And he sells out arenas based on the fact that people love him through his podcast. That's how I found out about him. And so I think if you do it well, if you do it right, like, there's an opportunity for it to help out in both regards, in both respects. But for me, I just find it really interesting. I've always found it interesting sitting down with people and just having chats. I've had a variety of podcasts. I still have another podcast called The Relaxed Running One. So my day job currently is I work as a distance running coach or a running-based sports coach. And part of that is just interviewing people about running. And I like just picking people's minds and finding out what they think and hearing their ideas. And I mean, there's no shortage of interesting people. I guess there's no shortage of podcasts either, but a lot of them stop as well. And so my goal with this one is just to do it for 10 years and see what happens. I'd be really interested just to see where it goes. And I like that idea, as I said, of just looking back and being like, oh, can you believe it started there? And I've been really inspired by Chris Williamson at Modern Wisdom and just watching what some consistent work in this space has done. I mean, he's just skyrocketed, and he's obviously really good at his job, and he's a really smart guy. He asks amazing questions. He has great guests. He seems like a really good networker as well. I just find that fascinating. Yeah, so a combination of, okay, first of all, I love the conversations. Second of all, I love challenging myself to get better. And third of all, just the excitement of like, hey, what will this look like in 10 years if you keep doing it? That for me is probably the biggest inspiration. I think so. A lot of people are worried about how saturated the podcast world is. But one thing, I think my wife said it. Jessie goes, babe, people have been writing books forever. And not every book's a bestseller. Not every book's an absolute hit, but there's no shortage of books. There's no shortage of interest. And you can have the same guest on 6 different podcasts, and every single podcast has a little bit of a different flavor to it. Even if they're speaking about the same things, I always find this interesting. You'll hear the same bloke on 6 different podcasts and they're all interesting. Like the Joe Rogan vibe and the Theo Von vibe is going to be very different to, you know, like hopefully what you're going to get on this show. And so that's the reason that I'm not worried about like the saturated nature of the podcast market is it's like, all right, well, if you're interested in a person, let's keep hearing from them. Let's hear the angles that another person comes from. Yeah, I'm just smiling because I'm thinking about Tucker Carlson on Theo Von's podcast and how much of a unique flavor that particular episode brought. Like I never saw a bloke like Tucker Carlson come in so relaxed and so silly. Yeah, I mean, you always see that serious side of him, and then you see him on a show like Theo's, and you're like, ah, yeah, okay, yeah, good luck just trying to keep a straight face for an hour and a half with this guy. How do you go selecting guests for your podcast, and what criteria do you look for in the guests? Yeah, I feel as though I just follow my curiosity a little bit. Like, I'm so interested in health and well-being, or health and fitness, I guess you'd say. And so a lot of the guests I've noticed recently just tend to be in that particular avenue. But I also feel like I go through themes and waves. And I reckon if you look back after a few hundred episodes of this podcast, that's exactly what you'll find. You'll see, oh, like there's a little bit of a theme there with comedians, or there's a bit of a theme there with, you know, exercise physiologists. But that health thing is something that I always come back to in every aspect of my life, because I love it for myself. I find it interesting. I find it fun. I love exercise. I love mindset. I love figuring out how you can just sort of help your body flourish, especially in this culture a little bit. Like, I think a lot of us are really disconnected with what a natural, healthy lifestyle look like, whether that's to the foods we eat or the way we move or the way we spend our days or our fear of sunlight or whatever it is. Sometimes we'll base our fitness or health choices on, okay, does the box say it's fat-free or it's got certain nutrients? Or I was laughing the other day because I was walking through Coles, our local supermarket here in Australia, or our biggest supermarket, one of, and I saw that Coco Pops was advertising like protein or a source of iron or fiber or something. And I thought, oh, isn't that interesting? Like, that's a fair sales point to someone who's not overly interested in the world of health and fitness. You probably see that and you go, oh, maybe it's not as bad for my kids as you think. And when you're not aware of, you know, sugar content or artificial colors and flavors or seed oils, all of a sudden things like that start to look interesting. So I like people who pierce through that narrative a little bit. Sometimes they're referred to as hippies, but in my eyes, I think they're just people a lot of the time who just have a fairly good take on just natural health, natural fitness, and how to get the most out of yourself in both areas. So yeah, that seems to be the theme at the moment. Also availability. Like, I think with the actual podcast platform that I have here, it's not the biggest show in the world yet, but it's growing. And I think as the actual show continues to grow, hopefully, or you would think in most cases, the availability or openness of guests to come on would grow as well. Because if you're a Jordan Peterson, you're not going to come onto a podcast with a few thousand listeners if you've got the opportunity to go on to a podcast with a few million listeners. And so with that said, I guess that's a little bit of fuel to my fire to keep working and keep working on the craft of actual conversation with people and asking good questions and taking it in interesting ways. Just that, I mean, you can go so deep in any element of or any area of life. And I think podcasting and just conversation in general is another example of that. Like, there's so many times I sit down and I'm like, I can't believe how many times I say that word. That's really annoying. Or I can't believe how long it took me to just get to the question, like to spit it out, Tice. But then tying those two things together where you're like, you're trying to actually take the conversation somewhere, but also link in questions and not go astray too much, I find a really interesting challenge. And so, I mean, like, there's endless things apparently that you can work on to make it better. So that's my goal. Hopefully, as the show grows, the availability of guests gets bigger and bigger. But I guess only time will tell. We'll see. We'll have a look where we are in 12 months or even 5 years. What one bit of advice would you give yourself to aspiring podcasters who are looking to build a successful show? I mean, I'm still on this journey myself, and I kind of just touched on it then. I think you've just got to start with what you've got, where you are. Like, a lot of the time, this seems to be something that impacts a lot of people regardless of what scene they're coming from, is they think they need to have the best gear, they need to have the best material, they need to have the best guests, they need to have the most interesting conversation, like the perfectly edited conversation. And as a result, it just turns out to be a massive brick wall which gets in your way of doing anything. Like, I was even having a look at the quality of this podcast a couple of weeks ago and just seeing from like the camera that I'm using to the microphone that I'm using, I started out with like a $200 microphone. You don't even need to spend that much now. I think you could probably just record a decent episode on your phone. And with that, I mean, let it serve as a start point. As I said, it's really fun looking back at how far you've come. Go and listen to the first couple of episodes of Joe Rogan's podcast and tell me that he had the best equipment in the world. It's really obvious that he didn't. But over time, once you become consistent, once you've sort of proved to yourself that you're actually in it for the long haul, I think it's easy to justify the little purchases. And naturally, as you start to make more money with the show, which I'm not yet, like, this show makes no money. It's purely a project of love at this point in time. I mean, but you can start to justify costs a little bit more. And so with that, I would say just start. If you've got a show that you're interested in doing, do it. I said this before as well. A lot of people are like, oh, I'd hate to start a show in 2024 or whatever it is. The truth is, a lot of people start new shows, but not a lot of people are still doing shows in 10 years. And so despite the fact that you're constantly up against new creators, new content makers, whatever, the truth is, if you're actually consistent, you start to establish a little bit of a following over the long term. The trust is built, and as a result, you know, what was considered a bit of a nothing show 5 years ago, Modern Wisdom, like I was just talking about, all of a sudden becomes one of the most talked about podcasts in the world. I can't see why, if you're half decent at what you do, you're getting good guests, getting good conversations, and like, you're recording good quality conversations, like audio, visually, you know, etc., why that wouldn't get traction. It seems to work. And so, well, as I said, time will tell. I might be wrong, but hopefully I'm right. Can you share some of your favorite workout routines or fitness tips that keep you in shape? I was talking about this to a guy at the gym yesterday. Mine is variety. And this is what I mean by this is I like the idea of just mixing things up. And I don't mix things up all that much, but at the moment I'll tell you my workout routine. But it needs a little asterisk. I'm currently training for a marathon. I'm getting fit. I'm getting back into running. I'm loving distance running again. Currently doing 4 days of running a week, about 50 Ks or 30 miles a week. And it's all pretty much zone two heart rate stuff. It's very light. It's mostly easy. It's just that aerobic style fitness where you're working on your heart, you're working on your lungs, you're working on your ability just to get oxygen around your body effectively. One day a week I'm doing a harder run, which is Thursday. And that's like zone three or four training where I'll go out and do like a threshold run or a tempo run or some intervals. The goal there is just to gradually get myself back in running shape. I used to be a competitive runner back in like 2014 when I retired. I was pretty good over 3K. I ran about 8:10 for 3K, which is good like nationally, but it's, I mean, the Australian record for 3K is 7:27. So I was half a track behind big Stewie McSwain. But yeah, the problem was I took my 2014 running style and tried to bring that into 2024. My body just wasn't ready. And so, okay, I just told you how I've got to try and get to the point of the question. 4 days a week of running is what I'm doing. And I'm doing three strength days. So 2 days of gym, actually in the gym lifting heavier weights, but more aimed specifically at running-based work. So the book's in the car. It's called Strength Training, Finish Strong, Strength Training for Endurance Runners by a guy called Angelo Gingerelli, who I've actually had on the podcast before. Awesome book, really helpful. Lays out the different phases, like the base training, the taper phase, the off-season phase, and just helps you really structure exercises which are relevant to to a distance runner's fitness. I'm also doing like a whole heap of mobility. So I'll try and do 3 or 4 days a week of that. Even if I'm just sitting in front of the TV, I'll do some stretches, have a chat to Jesse, watch a show. Or it might be like a more structured yoga session. For me, they're pretty much, even if I'm not running, they're kind of the elements of fitness that I'm into. I'm into aerobic fitness. I'm into strength. I'm into flexibility. And then obviously, if you're trying to look after yourself physically, you start looking after yourself more mentally. And that's an area that I'm really starting to focus more on as well. Just making sure I'm as disciplined with the things I'm allowing to go through my mind as what I am with the things I'm allowing to go into my body and the work that I'm putting in, blah, blah, blah. I'm also the kind of person that gets a little obsessive. So I find it easy just to go all in rather than go, okay, I'll just do a little bit here and there. A favorite workout routine at the moment is probably, I'm doing a 30-minute threshold run on a Thursday. So I'll go out and I'll do a 3K or 4K warm-up, usually 3K, some stretches, some strides, and then I'll, last one, I maybe pushed it a little bit fast or a bit hard, but I was doing 3:45 per K. I averaged 3 minute 45K pace for the 30-minute threshold run, which is, I mean, in 12 months, I'm hoping I'm running a lot faster. And I think if I'm uninjured, I will be. But yeah, I'd love to run a pretty fast marathon in a couple of years. And I've just got the bug big time with running. It's turned into a hobby again. I really love it. And so my favorite workout right now is that one. Another question was, fitness seems to be a significant part of your life. How did you first get into it? That's the interesting second part. How does it intersect with your career in comedy and performance or content creation? Fitness seems to be a significant part of your life. It's a big part of my life. I was so OCD as a kid. It was almost like it was definitely a problem. Like I was very obsessive about food. I was very obsessive about exercise. I don't know what caused it. I don't know why I became like that. I got interested in running. I saw how much the Kenyans did and I thought, okay, I guess I have to do that. And they're all skinny, so I better make sure I'm skinny. And so it was like a dangerous threshold that I was walking on there because I was constantly on the limits of probably what I was capable of doing. So it started off in an unhealthy way, trying to get fit for running, and then just turned into a love over time. I feel better when I do it. I love doing it. I love the idea of getting old and being strong. I hate feeling sore. I hate feeling though I can't do an activity because my body's limiting me too much. So inspired by old guys. There's a bloke called Graham who I met on my long run out on the Ballarine Rail Trail here on Sunday. He's 85 and he was just going for a ride from Point Lonsdale out towards Drysdale. And I mean, you could tell he was 85, but he was an 85-year-old guy going for a 20K bike ride, which I loved. And so I thought, hey, I want to be the kind of bloke who at 85 can go out for a bike ride. And I think too many of us look at fitness and exercise as something that we'll do eventually, rather than actually going, okay, like let's start taking steps now. Like, you're not going to have $1 million in the bank if you're not smart with the way that you actually invest your money, and you're not going to have a really good, fit, strong, healthy body if you're not investing in it now. That's the philosophy I take, and so that's what keeps me motivated and inspired. I'm sure I want to look good enough for my wife not to run away when I take my shirt off, but also I just like the idea more of the functional fitness that comes with the exercise that I do. What do we got here? With the rise of social media and online content, how do you think the landscape of content, comedy and entertainment is evolving? That's a really interesting question. I reckon it's interesting because in comedy, people are trying to build audiences in a whole variety of ways, and some of them compliment people coming to their shows and some of them don't. So you'll notice, I think sometimes it can kind of water down the quality of a person's actual comedy because so much of the work they're doing is aimed at, okay, I'm going to do a funny 15 second TikTok video, and then they'll build a massive audience and maybe some people will come to their show, but they still struggle at stand-up comedy. And so I think, from my opinion, you've got to know the reason for why it is that you're actually creating the online content. If that online content complements the work that you're doing on stage, brings people in, and it's like they complement each other, awesome. But if your goal is to sell tickets, but what you're doing online has no semblance of what you're doing on stage as a comedian, then I feel like sometimes that might be a little bit of a waste of time. But it's a really interesting space to watch. I know so many comedians are online in some capacity, myself included. And so, yeah, this is something I'm learning about. I know there's some great comedians also who are like Luke Kidgell, who's just posting a lot of crowd work, which is something I'm starting to post a little bit more. It's an area that I'm learning about. But it'd be really interesting to watch more. Anyway, that's just a little bite-sized one for you today. I hope that was fun. I'll be back with a guest next week, so I'll see you all then.